I briefly want to wrap up this morning where we have been going through the first six chapters in the book of Daniel. And we're going to end with what is probably the most well-known and most well-loved story in the book of Daniel, and that's Daniel in the lion's den. Kids love it. Sunday school teachers love to teach it. It has been an encouragement to Christians and believers throughout the centuries, and it makes sense. I mean, it's got everything. It's an exciting story. It's got twists and turns. It's got a plot and God rescuing, and the good guy wins, and the bad guys, well, they end up not, they don't win. I'll just put it that way. But all along the way, what we see is we learn the secret of Daniel's success, and what we find is that it's not so much a what as a who. We've been talking about that throughout the series, so this won't be a surprise to many of you. Somehow, he managed throughout all of these years to survive, and not just survive, but thrive in a very hostile pagan environment, which is a good place for us to start today, because we live in a world that's just full of spiritual hostility. And thankfully, the book of Daniel shows us what it means and what it looks like to live in an environment that is just spiritually hostile. And we see that example in Daniel's life, that it is possible to live as a faithful believer, a faithful follower of God in that environment, but it's not always, it's very usually not easy to do. Sooner or later, if you are a follower of Jesus, and the deeper you get into your faith, you're going to run into opposition, you're going to run into difficulty. And we see that especially in this story of Daniel. Now, you can tell a lot about a person by their enemies. In Daniel's case, he must have been a pretty good guy because of the types of enemies he had. His enemies were people who were no friends of God. And that's really why they opposed him, was because of his faith, was because he believed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Yahweh. And they didn't have an answer for what it was that he believed. Well, by the time we get to chapter 6, quite a few things have happened. Daniel, if you remember, was one of these exiles that had been brought to Babylon years earlier when the people of God were sent into exile in Babylon. And by the time we get to chapter 6, Babylon and its king, Nebuchadnezzar, they are long gone. We talked last week that their ending was recorded in two very short verses at the end of chapter 5, and then we don't hear anything else about them. And Daniel finds himself in a situation where there's a new kingdom with a new king in charge, and that's the Persian Empire and their king, Darius. The names have changed, the situation has changed, but the challenge is still the same. Is Daniel going to remain faithful when the pressure is on? And so we're going to pick up the story right at the beginning in chapter 6, beginning at verse 1. It's a very familiar story to many of us. Even if you don't have much of a church background, you've probably heard the story of Daniel in the lion's den. But here's how it begins. Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. But they couldn't find anything, to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. So they concluded, "Our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion." So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, Long live. They probably said it in that accent too, so there you go. "Long live King Darius. We are all in agreement, we administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, and governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, Your Majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, Your Majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed. An official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. So you see right away after Daniel is in this new kingdom, is taken over, a situation arises, and once again, Daniel is faced with a challenge. This time, though, the challenge that he faces is a little bit different than the ones he's faced before. In all of the previous challenges, it's basically him being called upon to come in and solve a mystery. The king has had a vision or a dream, and he comes in to interpret it. Now, his interpretation could have led to some new and exciting challenges for Daniel, namely some life-threatening challenges, but we don't see that. That's not typically what happens. He comes in and he rises to the occasion, and when he does, he gets promoted. He gets more influence, and he's lifted to a higher position in the kingdom. This time, though, the challenge is a little bit different, and it comes because there's a group of officials in the Persian government who aren't quite excited about Daniel being in charge. They're jealous of what he's doing, and they devise this plot to take him out. Daniel had, up to this point, looking back at his entire career, I guess you could call it, under the Babylonian Empire, he had proven himself so capable that when the Persians came into power, they took advantage of that. They're like, well, we've got to keep this guy in charge of things. He's good at what he does. And obviously, and what ends up happening is he gets put in charge, basically, of all of the other people who are in charge. So he's the general manager of all of the managers. And they don't like that. I mean, who does this guy think he is? He's not even Babylonian, let alone Persian. He was one of these exiles that Nebuchadnezzar thought he needed in his government all those years ago, and he's still around. So they come up with this plan to get rid of him. And when you look at the plan, it's brilliant what they do. Because the first thing they do is they go to the king and they start pumping his ego, which, by the way, is an effective way to get on the good side of a king. If you want to get him to do something, you just start telling him how great he is. And that's what they do. Long live the king. Hey, you know what would be a good idea? What if we made a law that everybody in the kingdom had to pray to just you? They couldn't pray to anybody else. That's a good idea, you know. And I mean, you're a king. You're almost a god anyway. You rule over all these people. What do you think about that? And in fact, we don't even have to do it permanently. Let's do a test run. 30 days. We'll give it a month. We'll just say this, king. For an entire month, nobody can pray to anyone but you. And of course, Darius is like, hey, I like that idea. And if you are familiar with the version of the story that I am partial to, as told by those lovable creatures created by Phil Vischer, the VeggieTales, it comes in the form of a song, which I am not going to sing to you. But they come to him and they present this, and he wants to go. He's like, yeah. But Darius is smart. He knows that, you know, they're going to have to figure out a way to enforce this, so he asks them the question, but what if they don't? That's the most VeggieTales you're going to get out of me. He knows that if people aren't going to do this, there's going to have to be some consequences, and so they say, if they won't obey, the citizen will be thrown into the lion's den. And he goes, he loves this idea, he goes along with it. And the officials have the king and they have Daniel right where they want them. Unfortunately, from Darius's point of view, he doesn't realize, in fact, he might be too proud to get this, that this has nothing to do with how great he is. It has nothing to do with his pride or anything like that. This is all about Daniel, who, by the way, is a man that Darius has come to rely on and trust and admire and respect. And it was a reputation for Daniel that he had earned through the way he lived his life. He was completely faithful and full of integrity. He had a spotless character. If he had any flaw at all, you know, it was that he was utterly and completely predictable. He was so faithful, he was so consistent, they knew exactly where they could get him. They knew that three times a day, Daniel was going to be in his room with his face turned toward Jerusalem, with the windows open, and he was going to do what? He was going to pray to Yahweh. And so they thought, that's where we're going to get him. We know. We know. He never fails. He's going to do this. And it's interesting that his trouble doesn't come from any weakness. It actually comes from a strength in him. He is a victim, I guess you could say, of his own integrity. Which is a good reminder to us that the deeper we go with Jesus, the firmer we become in our faith, the more intense the opposition is going to be. And we're not just going to here and there run into opposition. It's actually going to come looking for us, as it does with Daniel. So what does he do in response to this? When he discovers that his enemies have passed a law that applies to one person, really, that's who the target is, and he's that guy. It's like walking around with a target on your back. Well, how he responds tells us pretty much all we need to know about Daniel. In verse 10, it says this, "But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with its windows open toward Jerusalem. He prayed 3 times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God." And notice that phrase there, "just as he had always done." For probably all of his life, Daniel had prayed 3 times a day. Each day was always the same. And I don't know what times it was, but whatever it was, wherever he was, whatever he was doing, he stopped. 7 a.m., noon, 5. It didn't matter what he was doing. It was like clockwork. His daily routine just revolved around this. If he had a business trip to some far-off province, 7 a.m., noon, 5 p.m. If he was on a vacation, if exiles got vacations in those days, I don't know that they did, but wherever he was, whatever he was doing, you could set your watch by his prayer times. I did the math to see how many times Daniel would have prayed had he prayed 3 times a day for 85 years, and it's over 93,000 times. That's not counting all of the times he prayed in between. It's no wonder he did that. I mean, that's a hard habit to break after 85 years. For him, prayer was like breathing, and he wasn't going to stop just because some uppity Persian officials were threatening his life. He went home, he knelt down, he faced Jerusalem, and he offered his prayers to God, probably knowing full well that his enemies were going to know what he was doing. Now remember who Daniel is. He's one of the top 3 people in the Persian Empire. His plate is probably full. His schedule is probably packed, and yet he continually finds ways to carve out time to pray to God. And I think he does that because he knows, I'm so busy, if I don't set this aside, if I don't carve it out, all of my duties are going to squeeze that out of my life. And he just wasn't willing to do that. In fact, he would rather die than stop doing that. If he had stopped praying, the lions would not have been an issue. His life wouldn't have hung in the balance, but he would have also forgotten all of these years of God's faithfulness to him. And he just wasn't going to do that. He could have even compromised. He could have closed his window and nobody would have known he was praying. But he had made a decision long ago that he was going to obey God no matter what it cost him. He had to know that if he didn't follow the law, the lions were going to eat him alive. But through all of these years of obedience, there was no choice. It wasn't a decision. He'd already made it. He was going to pray. He was going to seek God's face. You could say that his life had been just one next right step after the other. So Daniel refuses to obey the decree. He prays just as he always had, 3 times a day with his window open facing Jerusalem. Doesn't make a big scene. He just goes on about his daily habit just as he always had. And of course, the officials are looking for this and they see it and they bring it to Darius' attention. And Darius has to act. He knows he's been tricked. He knows he can't rescind the law. He's written it in such a way that he can't. And besides, even if he tried to, it would make him look weak. He's early on in his reign. He just can't do this. But to his credit, he tries to find a way out. He tries to find a loophole here. He doesn't want Daniel to die. Darius is actually, I guess you could say, at the end of the story, he ends up being one of the good guys, sort of, because he wants to rescue Daniel, but he knows he just can't do it. And so he calls Daniel in and he says, I can't save you. But he says something incredible. And I love how he says this. He says, Daniel, I really hope the God that you so faithfully serve will rescue you. There's something to be said for Darius's character. Now, arguably, the reason he's in this entire situation is because he let his pride get the best of him. But he's a pagan king, so we'll cut him some slack. But he at least sees and acknowledges that Daniel's only hope is Yahweh. And by extension, Darius's only hope of having Daniel around in the future is the same God. And so Daniel is thrown in the lion's den, which was basically a pit dug in the ground with a hole on one side to let the lions in, and a hole in the top that you would drop the person in with, put a stone over. It was a very effective form of capital punishment. And I don't doubt that Daniel had to be nervous as things are progressing. He had to be playing all the scenarios through his mind. And I'm sure he was praying as they threw him into the pit, and then he hits the bottom. He can hear the lions. He can hear them breathing, but there's no roars. There's no growls. The teeth that he might be expecting to get a hold of him, that there's nothing. And the seconds tick away, and they tick into minutes, and he starts to relax. The minutes tick into hours, and the lions don't touch him. Daniel would later say that an angel rescued him. Now, I wonder if he had a conversation with that angel, and I would love to know what the conversation took. I wonder if he played with the lions like they were little kittens. We may never know. We'll have to wait to find that out, but who knows. But whatever happened, any fear that Daniel had going into that lion's den, and it would only be reasonable to have fear. I mean, you're being thrown to wild animals. But whatever fear he had was gone. And he was reminded again that Yahweh was the Lord over everything, including the lions. And besides, he had already discovered something that was worth dying for anyway, which is why he kept on praying what others might have stopped. Since he wasn't afraid to die, he had the courage to go on serving God faithfully. And I'm sure Daniel slept like a baby that night. Darius, not so much. He tossed and turned. And early in the morning, I can picture him jumping out of his bed and running down to the lion's den to see what had happened, hoping against hope that somehow Daniel had survived. And we pick up the story in verse 19. Very early the next morning, the king got up and hurried out to the lion's den. When he got there, he called out in anguish, "Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "Long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths so they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Now, it's true that God did not prevent Daniel from being thrown in the lion's den. But Daniel was not thrown in alone. God jumped in with him. Think about that. God jumped in the lion's den with Daniel. And as a result, that's why when morning came and the stone was taken away, he was alive and unharmed. I mean, there wasn't a scratch on him. They didn't have to call 911. Nobody had to do first aid. He was as healthy and strong as he was when they threw him in the pit. Back to Darius for a moment. You can hear the desperation in his voice as he calls out to Daniel, because he's probably thinking he's going to call out and all he's going to hear are lions roaring back at him. He has been cheering for Daniel's God to come through. And what happens? Surprise, surprise. He hears this voice that he recognizes. Long live the king. Yep, I'm here, and the God that I serve has rescued me, in case you were wondering. For his entire life, Daniel had trusted in the God that he had seen deliver over and over. He just trusted. There was nothing fancy there. He just trusted in God. He'd seen what he had done over and over and over again. And it wasn't about to change in his life. He just simply kept on trusting God, and as a result, the lions couldn't touch him. And the end of the story comes quickly and rather violently. The enemies that had plotted against Daniel, they are thrown in the lion's den along with their families. I didn't say it was a pleasant story. And then Darius offers this public praise, and I love these words from Darius in verse 26. I declare, or I decree, that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his rule will never end. He rescues and saves his people and performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. That's not the first time we've heard one of these pagan kings say something like this. It almost sounds like it could have come from David himself, but it doesn't. It comes from a king who might be aware that God exists but doesn't serve him. And he realizes who this God is. Or maybe he's not a pagan king anymore. Maybe he becomes a believer in Yahweh. We don't know the whole story. We don't know if Darius is in heaven, but I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see him as Daniel and Darius trade stories about the lions. That's a great story. That's an incredible. It's no wonder it's one of the most well-loved stories in all the Bible. But there's a few things about it in closing that I want to point out that I hope are an encouragement and a challenge for us. First, look at Daniel himself. And again, this is no, we've talked about this throughout this entire series. Daniel's an incredible character. I love how he's even kind of described by his enemies. In verse 4, it says he was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy, and his enemies couldn't find anything to condemn in him. Now, when was the last time your enemies complained that they couldn't find anything in you to complain about? That was Daniel. He was rock solid. And again, if he had one flaw, it was that he was utterly predictable in his faith. And so that's where they caught him. They knew exactly where he was going to be. They knew when he was going to be there, and they knew what he was going to be doing, and that's how he caught him. One little detail about the story that I had never caught before, I'm sure I'd seen it, but I just never realized it, is when this happened, you realize Daniel is he's not a young man. He is likely 85 plus years old. He's well into the twilight of his life. We tend to think, and it's probably the way the story is portrayed, that Daniel's a young guy with his life ahead of him. No, he's not. I mean, you got to remember, he's been in exile for almost 70 years, and he was not a baby when he was brought into exile. He was a young man. In fact, it's just as much a miracle that he didn't break a hip when they threw him into the lion's den as it was that the lions didn't eat him. Some of you will appreciate that. Back to that in a sec. But another thing about the story, and this is the most important thing, and not just this story, but I think it's the most important thing about anything we read in Scripture. As great as Daniel is, and as wonderful an example as he is for us, you realize he is not the hero of this story. The book might be named for him, but it is about someone else completely. It's about God. And it's about God and His faithfulness, and particularly about God and His faithfulness under crazy and difficult circumstances. You realize, had it not been for God, we probably would have never heard the name Daniel. He would have just been another exile from Judah who bucked the system and got thrown to the lions. We would have never heard anything about it. But we heard about him because God rescued him. Why is that so important? Well, here's why. I think, and this is something that probably especially applies to us guys. We want to be the hero of the story. We want to be the ones that save the day. And there is something admirable about that. I mean, we see something, we're moved to action, and that's not, I'm not downplaying that. That's a good quality to have. But you realize that the only way that happens is if we let the actual real hero of the story be the real hero of the story. And if you were wondering who that is, it's the same hero in Daniel's story. It was the God that he so faithfully followed. And he faithfully followed him because God had been so faithful to him. That's who Daniel committed himself to. He's the hero that Daniel lived his life pointing to. You realize all of the other ones in the stories, that the story that tried to be the hero, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar last week, these Persian officials, they end up being the goats, and not in the way that we refer to goats now. Only the ones who point to another hero are the ones who end up saving the day and in the end are saved themselves. Back to Daniel. I think it's fitting that this story, which probably is the most well known from this book, and it highlights most vividly Daniel's faithfulness and integrity, is the one that takes place latest in his life. You realize Daniel did not start in the lion's den. He started by every day putting one foot in front of the other, following God, obeying here, trusting there, building a life that intentionally made room and set aside space for God to speak. And when God spoke, Daniel listened and he obeyed. The experience he has in the lion's den and everything that had led up to it, it was the result of a life that had been well lived in obedience to God for 80 plus years. Now, I'm not telling you it's going to take you 80 years to live a faithful life to God. I'm telling you that's what the fruit of a faithful life looks like at the end. And you know what happened as a result? Yes, Daniel prospered. Yes, God blessed him. He rose in the ranks. But more importantly, through his life, God was revealed for who he was to people who either would not or could not see him for who he was. What if that was how people described us? What if our sons and daughters, and I got to share a story. I was going to do this at the beginning. VBS. Simon comes to me the other day, or I guess it would have been yesterday, and he says, "Hey, Dad, you know what my favorite song is?" And I thought for sure it would be Church Clap. And he looks at me and he says, "The Goodness is Running After Me song." That does a dad's heart good. And it does good because that was the specific part of the song that he pointed out. He knows God's good at 5 years old. He knows that God's good. I hope he never loses that. And I hope he doesn't lose that because of what he sees in his dad. I know he sees it in people around him here because that's where he picked it up. But what if our sons and daughters and our wives, our husbands, our siblings, everybody we come into contact with, what if they saw the goodness of God? What if they saw God for who he was through our lives? You know, we have those two little words we like to kick around here. We are because of people. We want to be people that others see Jesus because of and not in spite of. I want that to be true about us. And the first step toward that is that step that Daniel made over and over and over again to make God the hero and center of our story. I want to pray a prayer to close this morning. And we're going to have it up on the screen and you can follow along. And I want to invite you, if that's your desire today, just, you can whisper this, you can pray it in your head, you can just follow along with this. I wish I knew who to give credit to this. I found it somewhere else and there was nothing attached to it. And I thought, oh, I love this. But this is my prayer this morning. Lord, I don't ask for an easy road, but for courage to walk the path you set before me. I thank you that my life is in your hands and that I have nothing to fear. Give me the faith of Daniel. May my colors be clear so that everyone will know that I belong to you. I do not pray for a den of lions, but I ask for courage to go there if that is your will for me. Above all else, may you be glorified in my life so that others will see Jesus in me. I pray this in the name of him who is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Amen.